Welcome one more time, gang.
All right.
And happy almost Memorial Day. Let's just dive right into our homework. And as usual, very moving, very personal, reviewing some of those Dale Carnegie principles. So we had 30. You're going to see some of the more popular ones came through. I'll kind of summarize those. But I have to read a couple, obviously. And, you know, just a word on Dale Carnegie first. Dale Carnegie, if you know anything about him, he was one of the first business writers in the United States, early 1900s. And we always tease and say all the books on our bookshelves, the business books, are somehow or another all copied from Dale Carnegie. He was kind of our forefather, a few before him, but he was one that really came out with the big book, How to Win Friends, Influence People. But his 30 principles are pretty impactful. And so we did see this, and it's one of my favorite assignments. You could do that 10 times and look at different categories. But just a couple that came through. Here is one, principle number 9 he had. Make the other person feel important. Do it sincerely. We all want to be loved. We all want to be appreciated. We all want to feel important. That we matter to somebody else. Our thoughts, words, and actions are valued. This is one of our people here today. So take the time to really listen to someone, your coworker, husband, friend, child. The easiest way to show someone they're important to you. It's very obvious to tell when someone truly cares when they have eye contact. I think this is huge, is the writer. So we're going to take this a little deeper. There are people at our office who want to stop and chat, but their eyes go over my head, over my shoulder, instead of looking at me as I speak. They are conveying to me that I'm not important. Are they bored with the conversation? Are they looking for someone else to talk to? I'm left feeling very unimportant, and it's not a good feeling. There's that word feeling again when we're engaged. I can remember my husband instructing my son how to shake hands when meeting someone. He stressed the importance of not only that firm handshake, but also looking that person in the eye. So simple, yet so powerful. I very much agree. And she left us with this quote, and I always love a good quote. This is from Mary Kay Ash. Pretend that every single person you meet has a sign around his neck that says, make me feel important. Not only will you succeed in sales, but you'll succeed in life. I thought those are some pretty good words to take to heart. Noteworthy. A lot of words on encouragement. We did have, and that's one of my favorite, and one of our people said, the video of the young boy in the karate cat class circling around is a perfect example of this. I actually just posted that on Facebook. I never put stuff on Facebook, but I saw that and said, oh, I'm putting that out there. And I love that encouragement. It's got, you know, it's a very powerful word, and I think we all recognize that. But a little word of encouragement, or what we call it down in phase two, is a little vitamin E. How do we encourage others, lift others up, elevate them? So that was one of my popular ones. I have another one here I'd like to push around. And this one is going to be our first award winner of the day. And that is Dale Carnegie's principle. And this one is how to be a good listener. Encourage others to talk about themselves. Well, what do you know? This is our habit today. Maybe this writer knew that habit number 5 was today. But here we go. I love this principle because it's one of my shortcomings in the past. Well, I already love this because we're admitting that we're not perfect, that we do have shortcomings, and yes, we all do. And it took me a while for me to identify this. Listening is a key fundamental skill that is commonly overlooked. With work, I used to focus primarily on things like productivity, time management. My leadership role, I found myself doing most of the talking and not nearly enough listening. Needless to say, it led to some difficult times and plenty of unnecessary stress. Can I have a hallelujah on that one? Once I realized the importance of becoming a good listener, I made a conscious effort to improve my listening ability. This effort is an everyday ongoing process and something that I'm constantly awareness. And that is self-awareness. That is one of our thoughts of what we have to do, our daily bread. Yeah, we have to work on these. These are kind of like the brain we talk about. It doesn't come automatic. You've got to train. And by the way, how do we become a better listener? Oh, by practicing listening. So, yes, thank you for sharing this, Ryan. And if you are listening, Ryan, you need to send me your address because I have the little golden book of Dale Carnegie. We're going to send you in the mail today, no extra charge. He actually does give us a little extra on his reflection, and I always love the little extra. And he includes here, being a better listener has helped me in my work, social relationship in general, most of my life. Through my personal research on this matter, I have this to offer. Good listeners, and a couple of pointers here, tend to be more productive, commonly make for better partners and coworkers, better problem solvers, make fewer mistakes, make fewer misunderstandings, build rapport, and are able to think more clearly. So excellent takeaways there. Thank you for sharing those, Ryan, and really appreciate that. And again, our top two Dale Carnegie principles everyone submitted was don't criticize, condemn, or complain. Love that one. I think I shared a poem on criticizing not long ago. And become genuinely interested in other people. And why not? Because that is really habit number five. So I'm sure we all know habit number five now by heart. Seek first to understand, then be understood. And I have to say, it is probably my favorite habit to talk about. And I'd like to really just kind of begin with a story. I'd take you back to late 70s. And the spot is in Point Pleasant Beach, a little beach house that we're renting. Good friend of mine, Jerry Coleman. Right next to Peter Cancro's house. And just true story. Never saw Peter that summer because he was never home because he was always working. Well, I saw him at the shop. Never saw him at his house, but actually lived right next to him. But it was just one of those summers. It was kind of magic. It was kind of an odd. Here you had two college weightlifter guys with an old woman, Anna, who was used to be a nanny for was married to one of the grandfathers. The grandfather passed away. She was never really married. She was just lost, and so she lived with us for. We kind of took her in, so to speak. But here you have to visualize this little old woman, 4'9" by about 4'9". And her name was Anna. We call her Nana Anna. But here we are living in this beach house together. And a lot of nights spent just listening, talking, playing cards, trying to stay out of trouble. And it was that fateful day when we had nothing more than a palm reader show up on the boardwalk. Now, that was pretty cool stuff back in the 70s. And now, again, this is a 70-year-old lady who was hearing us talk about the palm reader, showing some interest. And when she was showing some interest, we said, well, maybe we should go down and take you down there. And she was in her very, shy self. No, I don't think I could go down and see the palm. I'd be afraid. And I'm like, no, come on, you should come down. We'll pay, no problem. So we finally convinced her to come down. And so on that very memorable day, we walked Anna down to the beach. We only lived three blocks away. And we saw the tent on the boardwalk. And as we walked up the ramp, she just immediately just started sobbing profusely. We didn't know what was the matter. It was just a very unusual emotion for, like I said, two weightlifting boys that didn't really know about old ladies crying. But we said, Anna, what's the matter? What's going on? Are you afraid? She says to us, no, I've never seen the ocean before. And we were dumbfounded. That moment was captured. We both wrote poems that day, my friend Jerry and I. We were poem guys, as you know. But there's a 70-year-old lady that lived three blocks from the ocean that never saw the ocean. And she grew up in Jersey City. She would drive on Ocean Avenue to get to the house so many times and never, ever. And she just was so overwhelmed with emotion because she saw that ocean for the first time, and it was so beautiful. We were all sobbing then, three, and we, by the time we got to the palm reader, the palm reader was very confused at what she saw. But, it really was captured in our palms, and I'm glad we did, because it was only a couple months later that Anna passed away. And it was one of those things where, she lived to serve us. And there was never a night we came home, there wasn't food, her famous tapioca pudding, these. But we captured that in these poems, and it was one of those moments where it led to this thought when I was reading last night, because it kept us connected. When we look back at that poem, we can visualize Anna again. And that's why I want everybody to write down the Heart Math Institute. So about a year ago, I stumbled onto this little institute, this little foundation that is really quite amazing. It talks about how we engage, and it really has a link to habit number 5. Seek first to understand, then be understood. We can actually now, through this, through science, these scientists are showing how these electromagnetic fields, our hearts communicate. Our hearts are actually talking to each other. And it's really a phenomenal thing. You can kind of, this is a free website, free service. You can pay some stuff if you want the research. I usually get the research and use it in some of my presentations. But it really is amazing today how we can now see, even in a room with 10 feet away, we can measure electromagnetic fields and actually communications going on. And the brain's involved. It's very intriguing for me. But as we start this little module here today, I'm going to start with a little quote from Stephen Covey, since it is his beginning. And here's what he has to say about this habit. Next to physical survival, the greatest need of a human being is psychological survival. To be understood, to be affirmed, to be validated, to be appreciated. You heard that in the first Dale Carnegie principle from Beth. And that is, I think it pretty much sums up. We need to belong to stuff, and we need to be heard. And I don't think we can continue to talk about this habit without really understanding the word, two words, really, empathy, compassion. We hear a lot about empathy and compassion. You're going to hear more about how we measure these things from the HeartMath Institute. It's really, again, so intriguing for me. But again, how do we get better at listening? This is the habit, really, of listening with empathy and compassion. We practice it. We've got to practice like anything else we do. We don't want to use some things that don't work, as we call, learned in graduate school, the Mrs. Lincoln responses. Maybe you've heard me talk about those before. How you doing, Mrs. Lincoln, other than the play? How's that going? You know, we need to be more observant of our surroundings, of people's feelings. We know what happened. President Lincoln got shot in the head right next to Mrs. Lincoln. So how was the play? You know, these are kind of the wacky things we ask people when we know they're not feeling well, when we know they're not doing well. We shouldn't ask them silly questions like this. The other no-no that we all participate in is the one-upmanship. You know, someone tells us how they just lost their dog, and then we say, oh, yeah, I lost my dog, too. My story is better than your story. You know, I can do better than that story. We're never really quite listening to what people have to say. Not really engaging. We don't learn, we don't make that connection. And that's what we're saying. This is the habit of really connecting. And that seems to be the key to relationships, and especially long-term relationships. I know I was never a very good listener because my grandfather used to tell me all the time, my Italian grandfather, one of his favorite sayings was, you know, listen. I tell you 6 or 5 times. You know, listen. But, you know, when you hear that happen, you know, he's right. We kids don't listen most of the time. And I know it took me, as it took Ryan. Ryan had a spot there. He had a mark of time when he became a better listener, where he knew we had to work on that. And I knew I learned it when I was in graduate school. And, you know, the graduate school partly was, you know, we heard about, I had to take a counseling class, Maslow. You've heard of Maslow's self-actualization. You heard of a lot of these counselor dudes. But one of them was Carl Rogers. And Carl Rogers, the Rogerian form of counseling. And this got into psychotherapy, but it really was how you listen, you paraphrase. And you know, you're not parroting, but you're paraphrasing. So what I hear you saying, so when we're actually listening to somebody, we can pause sometimes so that they know we're listening, and we can paraphrase. And it's very simple. It's very basic counseling. It was when you got pretty good at this in our group, you got to volunteer for the suicide hotline. And that was something that was very unique. And, wow, you talk about self-discovery. When you got to, when you took your first 800 call on suicide, and I can still remember we were trained where we could talk to anybody and practice our skills unless they were talking about a knife, a rope, or a gun. They were talking about a knife, a rope, a gun, and we just had to get the supervisor on and let the real guys do their thing. But we were practicing our listening skills, paraphrasing, and actually sometimes that's all we need is, you know, even when people that are distressed and stressed out, somebody to listen. And so, you know, the other thing is we learned about was I messages. And maybe you've heard of I messages before, and they come in a couple different ways. What I wrote down here is, hey, am I understanding you completely? The other thing about an I message is that we don't use the word you when we're talking with somebody. We don't want to attack. So when we are, you know, it kind of leads to arguments. You've probably seen this before. Well, you are not listening to what I'm saying, or you did this. You know, it just cuts off the engagement, cuts off the communication. That's when you need your magic word and separate from that, you know, step back. So we know there are some techniques we can look at and study and practice. Here's just a quick thought I came up with here when we were looking at this. When I ask you to listen and you feel you have to do something to solve my problem, you have failed me, strange as it may seem. All I ask for you to do is listen. Not to talk, just hear me. That's the other thing. We, as leaders, we always want to do stuff. We're action people. We have to execute. Sometimes we have to learn just to sit back. We don't have to do anything. Just shut up and listen. And, you know, and then really make sure we, our listener knows. And so a book not long ago shared with my guys, Art of Leadership by Notker Wolf. Easy name there to remember. Here's some of his pointers. I have three main pointers from Notker. Listening with the ear of your heart. That was his shtick. Listening with the ear of your heart. So there's that heart again. As a leader, you have to respond to nonverbal signals. You also must have knowledge of human nature. I've been fired, I think, twice now because I've mentioned human nature too many times in a meeting. It's like, hey, you guys going to understand human nature or what? But I love that. You know, you have to understand where people are coming from. But, yeah, listening has to be learned and repeatedly practiced. It's a continuous exercise in patience. When you think about it, it just doesn't really come naturally. Some people have that gift, and we need to use that gift more. But here's my favorite. Listening is often the greatest service you can do for another person. And that's what they taught us on that hotline. So, one of the... We haven't mentioned much about compassion, but I love talking about when I found this story on 60 Minutes, Oprah. Some of you might have heard this one before, but I was channel surfing one time not long ago, and Oprah came on. It was her picture, and it was her saying, and this story changed my life profoundly. And I thought, damn, I'm not going to be watching football. Uh-huh. I got to tune into. And she was, I guess, working for 60 Minutes, but she was actually going back to Milwaukee to do this special program on this school called St. A's. St. A's was a new school that had been designed for kids with PTSD. And maybe everybody knows what that is now. You maybe suffered from it yourself. Most likely you have at some point. But what she saw was what she called uncommon compassion. And, you know, we break that word down, compassion, compasio, suffer with. And that's, you know, we say, hey, when you're working at Jersey Mike Line, you're suffering with everyone here. You know, you're a team suffering. But, I mean, I know what compassion is. But when I see it, when I see pictures of Mother Teresa, I see compassion. When I see what you know, these things are, what Oprah was saying was that what she saw was amazing because the counselors changed what they were asking the kids. And so the success rates were going so high, they were getting visits from everywhere across the country, all these experts. But the counselors, instead of saying, what's wrong with you, just changed that phrase and said, what happened to you? And by just saying, what happened to you, the kids started trusting a little bit more. The walls came down a little bit more. They started progressing and actually started to get a little bit of a healing process. So compassion when we're listening, I think, is a big deal. Again, we have to practice it. And really sometimes it is suffering with. But this whole habit, number five, seek first to understand, then to be understood. What a big deal. We have a little foundation you've probably heard of, I Am Second. And that we learn that it's no longer about you as a leader and as a mentor. You know, your needs really get thrown back. As a parent, you already know this. As a mother, you kind of really know that. So I'm going to give you a quote. This is from a famous fellow I once met. We must develop an attitude of gratitude. I am convinced it is the crucial prerequisite for a happy life. We must develop an attitude of gratitude. I'm convinced it is a crucial prerequisite for a happy life. A guy by the name of Harry Fafosnik. don't know if you ever heard of him. Might have been my alter ego. Homework. Homework. Now, you know, sometimes we say that mentors do have to push you a little bit, right? We have to challenge each other. And I'm looking at someone here who I once challenged, and she got very upset. But it's only natural this comes back. And I'm moved to say that we're going to take 2 weeks on this homework assignment. But we are going to prepare to write a poem. Now, I know this originally does create some PTSD in some. But I just want to take another minute to explain. You know, when I put in the book, Mike Woodson wrote that poem that inspired me. Everything you do and say, everything about your way, from the morning till the end of day, you are your attitude. Simple poem. Simple, you know, it can be a four-line poem. It can be, I want you to look up this name, Max Ehrman, and look up the poem Desiderata, one of my favorites. It's a long poem. But whether you look up other people's poems, I mean, you know, we had to learn Keats and Shelley and some of these classics. Poetry is not anything about that. Poetry is outside the lines. And it's more emotion. There's no periods you have to worry about, commas. You know, there's no boundaries. And you learn some of these things when you're writing a poem or you take a poem class, which I had to do. But the thing I wanted to share was, I never did share the poem that Mike Woodson also wrote that never went anywhere, but it was called My Very First Dad. So, you know, again, these are mentally handicapped kids, special ed. And here's a kid who wrote this poem, and it was more of a story. But it was talking about his very first dad who loved him so much and took care of him so much and how that connection, and, you know, it was really a beautiful written emotional poem. But I already knew that he didn't have a dad. And his dad took off before he was even born. And the truth was he was getting beat by his third stepdad. But that's where he went. That's where he went back in his mind. You know, he went back to what a dream that was. That's kind of writing poetry. I know a lot of mine, you have to find a spot where you just feel happy. Probably a third of my poems came from the lifeguard stand. But when we talk about poems also, I think it's kind of like sometimes when you're just doodling. You know, make a rough draft, come back to it. There's no rights or wrong, but it is kind of a personal thing. You may share some of them, you may not. But it's I think it to me for it, it's kind of what I would say, it's more of a gift or a treasure. I personally find kind of a sacredness in it because, you know, in the early days of Scripture, they were, you know, the Psalms or poems, Proverbs or poems. So, find a quiet place, get inspired, maybe go outside. I know Phil's going outside because Phil read the book Natural Born Heroes. He knows that everything's better outside. Try to stretch your vocabulary somewhat, but you have 2 weeks. 2 weeks now. Pick a topic, something that means something to you. So, I know. We had to sneak that one in there before the end. Everybody quit, but let's see how many people. See what you can do with this one. I'll be looking for some poems in the next 2 weeks. And with that, let's have a very lovely Memorial Day. Something you'll remember. Arrivederci.